Welcome to Recalculating America, a program dedicated to small business in America. Recalculating will help you, the American small business owner, build a new business or help you to grow your existing one. Each week, experts will give you useful information about starting your new business, and you will hear from professionals selected to help you grow your business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest and has many years of experience helping small businesses build and grow their businesses. Now he is sharing his ideas with you over the air. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do. Now, your host, Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins.
Well, good morning. This is Dan Perkins, and I'm your co-host along with Don Mazzella in Recalculating, a program dedicated to helping small business leaders increase their profits. We draw our name from the best-selling book, which features the contributions of more than 100 presidents, experts, and leaders, all of them who offer ways to grow your business. Don?
The only constant in business is change. For small business leaders, it means taking the time to better understand what is happening to their companies, employees, and clients. In every show, Dan Perkins and I and our guests will talk about what is happening in today's world. I'm a veteran journalist, author, and small business radio host, and I'll be talking about a lot of things that affect small business. Dan will especially concentrate on the cash management and investment side of it. He's a very prolific commentator. We met on other programs, and the results have been some interesting discussions. Dan?
Well, today we start with Pamela Weber, Chief Marketing Officer of 99 Designs. Well, you couldn't come up with a 100th one? Over 99 Designs. If you haven't heard about 99 Designs, that's okay. It's a fast rising company with a wonderful service to small business. And that's really what we're about, providing help to small business. Pamela, welcome to the program. And
Thanks, Dan. Our first question
is about you personally. Tell us a little about yourself before we talk to you about your company and what it brings to the show.
Right. Great.
Well, as you
already mentioned, I'm the CMO of 99 Designs. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about the company in a bit, but 99 Designs is a graphic design marketplace, the largest in the world, and we help small businesses and entrepreneurs get their graphic design needs met. That includes logos, business cards, website design, email design, you name it. We can help you with it. And I've been in marketing most of my career. I actually started my career in the internet many years ago. I first worked as a marketing manager at eBay and PayPal, and through the years I've worked for a variety of companies, both large and small, mostly in the marketing arena, helping them grow. I am an entrepreneur myself. I took some time to start a small business in the home decor space, and so I'm fairly familiar with the trials and tribulations of being an entrepreneur and being a small business owner. And I use that experience as well as my market experience to help the hundreds of thousands of small businesses that we serve here at 99 Designs.
Can I, Pamela, I want to follow up with a quick question, if I could. You talked about a whole array of services. One of the things that's very important to a small business is their presence on the web. And I think I heard you say that you do website design. Can a small business afford you?
Absolutely. We are priced, in fact, 99 Designs has been successful because it has come in and provided a solution that is, frankly, a lot less expensive than what you might get from a traditional brand or advertising agency. Our pricing, at least for logos, starts as low as $299, and then you can get, and that's for a logo, and you can get other services for lower prices and higher prices depending on what you're looking for. So absolutely, a small business can afford us. We are, you know, that is who we target and who we serve.
And that, the web being so important, what give us a sense of what it costs to have you design a website? Because I actually a friend who's looking for a web designer, so maybe we can do a little business in the next couple of days.
Absolutely. So the most important thing in understanding what the cost of a website and cost of website design is to really understand what kind of features you're looking for. So, for example, if you need an e-commerce site or if you need a standard website that communicates that, you know, you're a consultant and you need a page that shows your information and maybe your background, et cetera. So it does kind of depend on the type of website you need. Our website design starts as low as $599, and with that you get many design options to choose from. And that's the uniqueness of 99 designs. So oftentimes when you go to a specific designer or you go to a design agency, you're just going to get one design, or maybe two or three, actually, I should say. Usually they give you two or three to choose from, and then you decide which one you like best. Our model is unique in that when you come to us, you tell us the type of design style you're looking for, and we have millions of designers who then look at your design brief and decide, if they feel they have the design aesthetic that best meets your needs, and then they provide styles. So when you come to us and you're paying $599 for a custom design, you're going to get, 50 plus designs to choose from.
Wow.
And those aren't all, all built out. You know, it's not the entire website design per se, but it gives you a sense of the direction that the designer would take. And then as you go through our process, you'll kind of hone in that a little more closely. And at the end of it, you'll have met a designer whose design aesthetic you trust and you like, because you've already seen their work, and then they finish up the work for you and you're on your way. Now, I should clarify that there is a difference between design and development. So we just provide the design services. We do have partners that can help you with the development part.
Super.
What do you mean by development, Pamela?
Mm-hmm. So that's the actual coding of the website. So the actual functionality, and let me give you another example. There are a host of website solutions out there. Some of them have functionality built in. So, for example, you could go to Squarespace, Weebly, Wix, I think even GoDaddy, to get a website that's already functioning. And then what we at 99 Designs could do is we could help you provide that sort of look and feel and brand on top of that to allow it to feel, like a more custom solution for your business. There are also web solutions where you could get custom, functionality built. A lot of people use WordPress if they want, pretty sophisticated functionality or something that's very unique to their business. In the e-commerce space, for example, there's a company called Shopify, maybe you're familiar with. They provide a very solid e-commerce experience that a lot of e-commerce providers providers use. So when I talk about development, I mean, the actual, what does the website functionality do? Does it allow you to schedule an appointment? Does it allow you to make a purchase? Does it allow you to enter an email address such that you can send that, information to the company?
Well, Pamela, one of the reasons we invited you here today is your company has done a fascinating survey. Tell us about that and some of the results.
Sure. So as I mentioned, we service many entrepreneurs, and we're always going out to them and, trying to understand what it is, trying to understand their wants, their needs better so we could better serve them. And what's interesting about this survey is we went out to understand how our entrepreneurs kind of adopted this do-it-yourself mentality and what they did to get their business off the ground and what we could learn from that. And when we collected the data, we just, cut it in a couple different ways. And one of the most interesting, the very interesting findings came about when we cut the data in male versus female entrepreneurs. And what we identified is that there were pretty different attitudes and even some gender biases that seemed to bubble up. And again, what we took from that is that, you know, gosh, if you take a look at some of these results, it really helps you understand how there could be, you know, differences in how women and men approach business, approach an entrepreneurial venture, and potentially impact their success.
Well, tell us more. You first, Dan.
I just going to just going to ask you, those are fairly charged words when you say gender bias.
Yeah.
Did you mean that prejudice against females, or that there was a difference in how men and women think about different processes as it relates to marketing and building and running businesses?
Yep, and it's absolutely the latter. So so it's, you know, I would say certainly this research was couldn't identify a prejudice per se. What it did identify were differences in attitudes or behaviors or, you know, just opinions on how men versus women approach or think they need to approach their entrepreneurial venture. So it is absolutely the latter.
So what did you find out about women are from Venus and men are from Mars or something like that? Did you find anything that you didn't anticipate about the differences between males and females about how they think about the business process?
Yeah, a couple of things. And just for a little bit of context, we surveyed 1,700 entrepreneurs, and these were from around the globe, but mostly U.S. respondents, who had recently used our service to get their logo done. So that just gives you a little bit of sense of where they are in their entrepreneurial venture, so likely fairly early. And so, for example, we just asked, you know, what do you think is the most important trait as an entrepreneur? And we found that men were more likely to say patience was the most important trait, and women were more likely to say that networking was most important.
Go ahead, Don.
No, you first.
No,
Dan.
That's right. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say elaborate a little bit more on that, because didn't you indicate that perhaps it's because the various genders viewed that they lacked patience on the basis of men and networking women. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, sure. So that's what we found. And so, you know, again, as we're looking at these results, we're also trying to interpret them. So from our perspective, we thought, you know, why might they say this? And as we dug into a little bit more of even third-party research, we found proof that there is research out there that says that women are actually more patient than men, or at least perceived to be. And there's also research that shows that women tend to have smaller professional networks than men. And so we kind of took a look at those, and to triangulate around that, you might take from it that, you know, women are potentially looking at all the things that they think they need to be successful as an entrepreneur, and they're probably saying to themselves, oh gosh, networking is really important, and I don't have that as much as maybe my male counterparts, so I'm sure that's very important. And likewise, I can suspect that, you know, men might look at that and say, huh, you know, I know I'm not patient, that's probably very important. So I think maybe there might be some, you know, indication of what I don't have, that's probably important, and I probably need to go out and get that. Mm. So that was our take on the answer to that question.
Pamela, you said that your research was about 1,700 existing customers?
1,700 customers, 1,700 entrepreneurs or small businesses who came to 99 Designs to get a logo.
And they are all over the world, but primarily in the United States.
That's correct, yes.
Well, do you have intuition or research that would help us understand how entrepreneurs might be different outside the United States than they are inside the United States?
I do. I don't have, let me think of something, you know, in particular, I don't have that data at the top, at the tip of my fingers, and I'm just trying to think if I can remember one important aspect. Actually, I think I do remember this. I think the gender biases were bias to your point, a charged word, were stronger in some of these other countries than even in the U.S. So I think I would have to go double check that stat, but I believe just the differences in general were a little bit more heightened.
Would you anticipate?
So it's harder for...
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Don.
We're all stumbling over each other because it's such an exciting topic. But I was going to ask, is it harder for women to get money than men?
So one of the other questions we asked that you're alluding to, Don, is that our research found that men are twice as likely to have raised over $100,000 in funding. So, and actually, that's the stat that's at the tip of my fingers. But yes, to your point, you know, men are raising more money, and you know, so when we looked at that again, we're trying to interpret what that might mean. And my sense, especially because I do actually live in the Silicon Valley area where there's a lot of financing for small businesses and entrepreneurs in, you know, the venture capital world is, I mean, it is no secret that the venture capital industry in particular is male dominated. And I believe that goes for most banks and financial institutions as well. And I personally, and Don, you and I kind of talked about this before, but you know, I don't suspect that it is a you know, kind of an inherent bias that women are not receiving money do anything related to their capabilities or potential. I actually think the result is more related to financing is oftentimes an emotional and a comfort decision as to whether you think you're going to get a return on this investment. And much of that comfort comes from the network or the relationship that you have with the person you're lending money to. Again, so, you know, using sort of Silicon Valley and venture capital as the example, you know, there's no entrepreneur that is not going to tell you that, you know, your relationships in, you know, the Valley really help influence whether you can access capital. And so back to the earlier point around networking and how women are less, don't have quite the strength of networks that men do, I absolutely can see that impacting financing of ventures for women. Again, not so much of, nothing to do with the credibility per se, but more in just this systemic way in which funding for entrepreneurs has, you know, happened over the last however many, you know, as long as entrepreneurship has been around, and how those existing networks and those existing infrastructures kind of support the, you know, sort of the, support the personal networks that you know, have enabled this funding to take place.
Pamela, let me follow that with a couple of other questions. Being a registered investment advisor and of 44 years experience, I have a lot of clients who are entrepreneurs, and I've seen businesses fail. And by and large, the principal reason why a business fails is not that they don't have a good business idea, but they are undercapitalized. They don't have enough money. Principal reasons why the business is male or female. But I'm curious, when you're talking about women perhaps making it more difficult to get capital, I wonder if there's a higher failure rate with women than men, number one. And number two, would you qualify the risk-taking ability between men and women to be different?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So on that second question, you know, I personally would absolutely. And, you know, again, this is my personal perspective based on, you know, my years of experience working with entrepreneurs and just being in the Valley. But I do, you know, as I've worked with both male and female entrepreneurs, I do just get the sense that women, not so much that they are not like they're not risk takers. I haven't observed any differences in terms of you know, actually be willing to take the risk on going after a venture. But what I believe I have observed is a hesitancy to risk other people's money. I don't know if that's a societal bias or, again, this is, you know, my personal perspective. But I actually think it might have something to do with kind of the dating culture that has evolved over the years where men are sort of more, are tend to be pursuers in romantic relationships. And so therefore they get very practiced at rejection, dare I say. And women aren't quite as practiced in that area. So going after something like funding, which is, you know, a little bit uncomfortable, you know, I think there's one reason, you know, that kind of going after the funding in the first place is, you know, again, I wouldn't associate so much with risk as much as I would with kind of this, you know, going to get to pursue something. But on the related point of risk, I do believe that women think a little harder about whether they're going to get the return from for the investors. And I don't... Again, this is a little bit, you know, from the data just says that they raise less money, and me trying to intuit why that might be. Just based on the female entrepreneurs I've worked with, it just does, you know, I think there is that sense. And maybe it's because women feel a, you know, sort of, you know, they know that female entrepreneurs are less common. They know that female success stories, therefore, are less common, and maybe they're just, you know, feeling that pressure. I don't know. Or maybe it is something to do with, you know, a little bit less, you know, practiced or willingness to kind of go after the big ask.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Pamela Weber, and this is Recalculating, a new show on helping small businesses grow, and we're live on AMFM 24/7. Don, you have we got a few minutes left. Do you have a question for Pamela?
Oh, yes. Well, we should also mention, Pamela, people want to reach you, reach your company. What is your website, and how did they reach you?
Sure. So we can, you can just search the internet for 99 Designs and go to, or type directly into your browser, 99, the numbers, Designs, DESIGNS.com. And you will be sent hopefully to a wonderful experience where you will be walked through what type of design, walked through an experience where you could identify what type of design you need, the style and type of design you are looking for, and in the end would be delivered a design that meets your both your business as well as your aesthetic needs.
Well, Pamela, I have one more question. You indicated that your survey also seemed to surface the fact that women's entrepreneurs start at a later age than men. Mm-hmm. Would you address that?
Sure, yeah. So that was one of the first questions we asked around demographics. We found that men tended to start their entrepreneurial venture at a younger age, and by that we're defining as under 35, and women more likely to start after age 35. And, you know, we sort of took a look at that. That sort of also seemed to be consistent with at least personal experiences as well. And I think where that comes from is, you know, it's women still, you know, tend to do the bulk of the child rearing and you know, child care. And, you know, I think as they, you know, there's just, are biological considerations when you're thinking about, you know, raising your family. And so I think women are, you know, coming out of maybe the early child rearing times and then feel more both maybe emotionally and economically, you know, able to kick off their venture. And I think, you know, just with men, there's sort of some different constraints there, or different, you know, priorities, which is why they start at an earlier age. So I think, Don, you had said that was pretty consistent with what you have seen as well. Is that the case?
Well, I have one more quick question. If, in your experience and from the survey, et cetera, if you had to tell our audience of entrepreneurs, what are two things that you and the survey indicates are important to a successful small business, what would they be?
Yeah. So I don't know if this is as much from the survey as I think it is just in my experiences working with, you know, entrepreneurs in 99 Designs. And Dan, even a little bit about what you were saying in terms of most businesses failing due to being undercapitalized. But I think the one piece of advice I would give any entrepreneur is to keep in mind that your business is likely to take three times as long to get off the ground and cost twice as much money, or even take the reverse, whatever it is. And that, you know, it's really interesting to have to give an entrepreneur that piece of advice because it's kind of the antithesis of entrepreneurialism. You know, with any entrepreneur who is going off on their own to pursue something, you know, wants and needs to believe that, you know, success is on the horizon and that this, you know, endeavor is, you know, worth their time and energy. And so they need this sort of sense of, you know, euphoria and almost impracticality in order to even, you know, leave their day job or leave, you know, something that, to do something different. And so to kind of have to give that piece of advice that's a little bit dampening of the enthusiasm doesn't feel great. But at the same time, again, Dan, to your point, you don't want an entrepreneur to fail because they're undercapitalized or, you know, because they maybe just misjudged, you know, what it takes to get a business off the ground, because generally entrepreneurs are doing this for the first time. And so that is, you know, that is the one piece of advice. And I try to, again, just try to balance that with, you know, yes, you want to inspire, make sure the entrepreneur feels inspired and, you know, believes that they can be successful. But you also want to balance it with just the practicality of getting, you know, the difficulty of getting a business off the ground and being able to weather the, you know, the storms that inherently come from doing something new.
I have one real quick, short question. I know we're running long, but the conversation is really interesting. Pamela, how will things change as the millennials age and move into that entrepreneurial level?
Yeah. So honestly, I think part of what's going to change is that I think we're going to see more entrepreneurialism. I believe that because just as we've observed over the last, you know, however many years it's been now, 20, 30 years, how business has changed where, you know, kind of the stability of a full-time job, whether that is at a larger corporation or a smaller corporation, is just not there anymore. And I think that's just a practicality we have to embrace. And therefore, you know, you can't depend on this company to, you know, deliver your income over an extended period of time. You can't depend on one company. And so I think, you know, the millennials probably will feel that even more strongly as, you know, even entry-level jobs are kind of a little harder to come by and full-time positions are a little harder to come by. You know, there's this whole economy that's been thriving around, you know, part-time work and contractor work and freelance work. I mean, 99 Designs is very much in the middle of it. We see that. Now, we feel good that we're able to kind of provide a service that allows people to, you know, make money. But at the same time, we recognize that, you know, we need to be able to help these entrepreneurs get businesses off the ground because that may be just the only option they have, or, you know, one of the more you know, sort of less risky options they have, as opposed to depend on, you know, another company for their income. So I think
Pamela,
we'll see a little bit more of it.
Pamela, unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being our guest, our first guest, and we hope that you'll bring future insight by coming back on our show in the future. And thank you for joining us today.
Yes, thank you, Dan. Thank you, Don. I appreciate being on the show and look forward to more conversations.
Well, again, thank you and have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Welcome back to Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful. Now it's time for Money in Motion. Dan Perkins is our resident expert in making the money you earn work as hard as you do. Here is Dan Perkins.
You know, I want to stop here before we Dan goes into his next section. And I asked Dan to talk about what I think is great charities working today. Dan, tell us about what you and your wife have accomplished and are trying to accomplish.
Well, we 2 years ago or so, maybe 2.5 years ago, we received a message from the Lord saying that we needed to take care of his soldiers. And we formed a 501c3 called Songs and Stories for Soldiers.us. And it's an organization that works with veterans in veterans facilities, in VA hospitals, VA outpatient clinics, community-based medical care. We deal with homeless in homeless shelters. We're working at Walter Reed. We also work at Brooke Army. We work with warrior and transition units and vet centers all over the country. And as of right now, in a little over 26 months, we are now at 63 facilities across the United States. And our program is very simple. Our mission is to try and help the soldier get safely to dawn. And we do that through an MP3 device, which we give to the soldier for free. And by the way, our website for that is songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us. And we'll put a link on our recalculating.biz website so you can go there. We give them an MP3 player that comes loaded with two novels, one of them being my first novel, and an 8-hour custom designed sleep audio to try and help the soldier, the veteran, to get to REM level sleep. Because what we're fighting today, the biggest challenge of about 30%, is post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. According to the Veterans Administration, approximately 30% of all male veterans have PTSD. And in a recent study, they released 27% of female veterans from Vietnam have PTSD. And the Gulf Wars, while they're still collecting data, they're estimating around 21% and probably going higher of women have PTSD. One of the elements of PTSD is sleep deprivation. The horrors that they went through leaves them depressed and confused, so they can't sleep. And you know from your own personal experience, Don, if you can't sleep, you probably don't make very good decisions. The result of sleep deprivation is increasing suicide rates. We know, for example, that male veterans commit suicide 4 times greater than their civilian counterpart. And it wasn't until just last year that the Veterans Administration began to release information on female veteran suicide rates. And they're astronomical. Whereas men are 4 times the civilian rate, women are 12 times the civilian rate. So our simple program of Songs and Stories for Soldiers, which gives the soldier this MP3 player, and the website, songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us, gives them accessibility to 3 million songs in 15 different categories, over 100,000 audiobooks in 25 categories, over 30,000 old-time radio shows, and then 4 additional 8-hour sleep audios. All that content can be downloaded by the veteran for free. And we've distributed almost 11,000 pairs in our 24 months, 26 months, 63 facilities. We hope to be at 100 facilities by the end of this year and 15,000 to 18,000 players through the end of this year. So it's a wonderful mission for us. It's very rewarding to go in to these hospitals and clinics and homeless shelters and help a soldier get a good night's sleep. We can't help everybody, but we can help a lot. And you can help us by going to songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us. Learn about what we do. If you like what we're doing, you can make a contribution right there on the website. And thank you for the opportunity to have the plug.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why Dan Perkins is my partner on this air, besides everything else. But now we go into another part of our program. Dan, you have some interesting ideas. The Dow Jones went above 21,000 yesterday for the first time. Everything's
right.
Happening. the floor is yours. What do you think is happening investment-wise and et cetera?
I really believe that for the last 10 years, 8 years of the Obama administration and the last 2 to 3 years of Bush 43, the country has been in a slow, gradual spiral downward. I think entrepreneurial spirit was tremendously dampened. I think a lot of people who would like to have a business didn't see an opportunity. The growth rate in the U.S. economy, for example, during the 8 years of the Obama administration, the aggregate, meaning all of the GDP produced by the United States in the last 8 years, didn't equal, on a cumulative basis, 1 year of the economic growth rate of China. So think about that for eight years, it took us 8 years to get 1 year. China grew about 7 to 7.5% per year for the other 7 years. So they've seen a tremendous expansion in their economy. I think that, and I use this to describe what's been going on. If you think about the economy being a human being, imagine that economy, that person is on their back and there's a foot on the throat, not enough to suffocate and kill, but enough to create shallow breaths and no real progress. When Donald Trump was elected president, I think the boot came off and there's been a tremendous shift in a matter of weeks to an opportunity that people believe that prosperity can return in a big way to the United States. You know, I think we as a nation, by and large, are optimistic people. We spent the last 8 years being punished and told we were not exceptional, that we're no better than anybody else in the world. And I think that reminded me of the last 2 years of Jimmy Carter, when we had the Arab crisis, where we had American hostages and we had oil going through the roof. We had inflation and interest rates through the roof. And the economy felt really quite negative. And yet when Ronald Reagan won the election, that whole psychology turned virtually in a matter of weeks. I think what we're seeing in the markets is the idea that America just might be able to be great again. Now economists are saying perhaps 2017 can be 3% plus in growth in GDP, and 18 could be perhaps even greater. When you have 95 million people out of work, when you have one in five households who has nobody in the family working, when you have 45 plus million people on food stamps, dependent upon the government. We have built a society over the last 8 years that we've taken away the will to succeed and replaced it with a dependency on the central government for existence. I think that's changing, and it's changing rapidly. And you look at what's going on in business formation, companies bringing businesses back to the United States. It's all happening because people see hope again in the United States. There are businessmen who have committed billions upon billions of dollars to come to the United States because of Mr. Trump, and have said so. We're coming back to the United States, or coming to the United States for the first time, because we believe in Mr. Trump. That's somewhat of an indictment against Hillary. You want to ask a question? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, because something just came across my computer. It says for the first time, the number of small businesses available for sale has gone up in the month of January and February. The emails indicated that has to do with Trump. What do you think it means?
Well, I think that there are people, there were people like our age, old guys in our 70s, who have built successful businesses. They're looking to retire. They're looking to downsize. So they're looking to sell off a piece or a portion of their business. My son, Nathan, is a specialist in ESOP transactions where people are selling their businesses to their employees and getting out and letting the next generation of people take over. He said he has seen a resurgence in ESOP activity. And I think the reason why businesses are for sale and why the ESOP activity is growing is because I think people believe that they can create value in businesses today. And I don't think they believe that they were creating any value in their businesses over the last 8 to 10 years. So if you create value, maybe the value goes up of your business. Maybe you can sell it for whatever and give it to the next entrepreneur to continue to grow your business. I think there is a spirit, Don.
Well, let me ask you the question about, again, here's an email across my desk. Where do you think interest rates will go for the small business owner?
Well, interest rates, the Fed has indicated that they would like to raise interest rates 3 times in 2017, probably about 0.25 point each time, 0.25% or 25 basis points, those of us in the business use. If you look at it from the standpoint, where do most small businesses get their capital to start their businesses?
Credit cards.
Those rates are still pretty high. They didn't come down nearly as much as other interest rates when interest rates declined during the Obama administration. So you might see some. I would expect the credit cards to begin to tighten their credit standards a little bit. And they're going to put some limitations on what you can do. They may pull back on some lines of credit for a while, but then I think they're going to start expanding them. The second place is home equity. Home prices are beginning to rise in many parts of the country. In other parts of the country, they're not. I have friends down here on Sanibel that have had a house for sale on the market up in the Chicago area, one of the suburbs. No offers, nothing. I have clients up in New Jersey who've had a house on the market for almost 2 years. They've reduced the prices several times. So certain markets are doing better than others. High tax states are not doing well. Low tax states like Florida are doing extremely well. And so the two sources, credit cards and mortgages, I think that you're probably going to see mortgage rates start to rise. They've already moved a little bit in anticipation. But on a relative basis, Don, they're still pretty cheap. What I suggest as an idea for a person who's considering starting a small business, has a need for capital, and you and I have talked about this, I would look and see if they have a home equity loan or a line where they're amortizing the loan balance each month. You might want to consider, based on what we heard from our guest, that it takes longer than you think to start a business. You might want to think about changing that home equity to an amortization program, to what is called an interest-only loan, where the amount of payment will only be the interest that would be charged against the loan. Principal remains intact. Typically, interest-only loans can be set up for as long as 10 years. And as a result, the repayment of the interest is a lower strain on the cash flow of the business. You also have some options under, at least today, we don't know how this might change with tax reform. But there are provisions where you can borrow money against, for example, your IRA, if you pay it back within a certain period of time and not have taxable income. So that could be a very interesting source of money. I think that – go ahead.
Well, I was going to – before you got too far away from it, someone came across my a computer and said, what do you mean by low tax and high tax states?
What I mean by low tax states and high tax states is you have, for example, New Jersey. New Jersey, where I used to live, has a very high income tax rate for the state. They have estate taxes. They have inheritance taxes. They have some of the highest property taxes in the world. And so as a result, it's harder to start a new business because the cost of starting is so high in New Jersey. However, here in Florida, we have no state income tax. We have no inheritance tax. And I moved my businesses to Florida out of New Jersey because it was saving me a lot of money. So the idea of if you're a corporation looking at how you're being taxed and where you are has a great deal of impact on the success of your business. If you're in a high tax state like New York or New Jersey or Connecticut, those northeastern states, everybody else is in the same boat. Everybody's paying much higher taxes. And so they're looking at how in the world can they pay their bills, pay their taxes, and have a profit in their business. It's tough to do. And so when you've got businesses, states like Florida, that are business friendly from a tax standpoint, you create a situation. Now, Mr. Trump wants to reduce the corporate tax rate, but small business people generally don't pay corporate taxes because the instruction structure they use are pass-throughs. They'll either use limited liability companies or limited partnerships to avoid that double taxation. But I think when you've got states that are encourage business formation and are growing, it's an ideal state to begin to think about starting a new business.
Well, we got to cut you off. Dan, I think I could go all day listening to you talk. I just have to add one other thing. We have a tax here in New Jersey, which is called a workman's compensation tax that says even if you don't have any employees like our company does, you still have to pay a tax on it, which is, again, surprising. And I'm told only 14 states have a similar type deal. But anyway, Dan, we have to end today. We'll be back next time for more information. By that time, do you think President Trump will outline his economic plan in the next week, or do you think it'll take longer?
Well, I think he told us in his address to Congress on Tuesday what some of his principles are. He wants to lower tax rates for corporations. He wants to have a special tax break to repatriate maybe $3 trillion offshore back into the United States. He wants to finish the pipelines. Remember, you know, when he talked about the pipelines, the current estimate of the two pipelines, the Keystone pipeline alone is estimated to hire 28,000 employees to build the pipeline. But you got to remember that while you've got 28,000 people working the pipeline, you're going to have 3 to 4 times as many people behind that, small businesses that are providing support, whether it's restaurants, hotels, housing, whatever it is, for all these people that are building the pipelines. And the Dakota pipeline will be finished. But I think that we looked at infrastructure. We look at infrastructure in the energy sector. We need to build new, more efficient, less polluting refineries, chemical plants. We need to get back to building nuclear reactors again. And we need to get back in looking at alternative, whether it's solar, wind, or whatever the energy is. We need to put all of America's resources in developing energy independence and energy opportunities within the United States. So he will bring out pieces, but remember, he can only propose. The Congress has to dispose. And I think right now the Congress, its pecking order is that it wants to do Obamacare first, repeal and replace. Then it will move to tax reform. And then it will deal with immigration and naturalization.
I agree with you, Dan. We'll have to cut it off here and go on to our next subject. But it's been fascinating, and hopefully we'll do it again next time.
All right, sir.
Dan, if you look, you can see me holding my recalculating cup that I got for contributing, and which you also got. It contains coffee, and this is a feature I want to continue, hopefully in every section, and talk about a very unusual company, Fire Department Coffee, out of Illinois. They were on a recent program on my blog, and I was just really fascinated by the coffee. And finally, I found after 20 years a coffee that I could really enjoy. So here's to Fire Department Coffee, probably the best I've had in 20 years.
Now, is it actually made by a fireman?
Yes, it actually is, surprisingly so. And he devotes 10% of all sales to fire EMT and police efforts, which I found really interesting. And
but tell me what's different about the coffee. I said, I'm not a coffee drinker. What makes coffee different to you? Why do you like it?
Well, I will tell you the thing that to me made it really different is it reheats well. And that to me is the most important thing, because whenever I have to reheat coffee, because I drink it all day long, and it always has a different taste.
Do you reheat it in the pot or in the microwave?
In the microwave.
Okay. The fireman started a coffee roasting company, and it's called Fireman's Coffee. Is it available across the country or just in?
FireDepartmentCoffee.com.
Right online.
And the cost is surprisingly equal to what you get in your supermarket. So I really enjoyed it. That's a great plug for this company, but I couldn't resist it. They just do such a great job.
Sure, that's fine.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. It's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Okay, we got about 8.5 minutes.
Well, I want to talk about McDonald's yesterday announced that it was finally going to permit people to call ahead and order before coming in. They're joining the age. I think this is a forerunner for more robotic order taking and robotics replacing workers in the restaurant. What do you think?
I'm just shocked that you could that there's a business model that says I can call ahead for a quarter pounder with cheese and an order of fries and a Coke. How many people? I don't know. I mean, they obviously have done some research, but I do know that I've been in several of the new McDonald's franchises where they're using kiosks for you to order as opposed to counter people. And it was interesting. I was at Jerry and I were at where was it? Olive Garden last week. And they have this little computer terminal wirelessly operated on your table where you can order your meal and you can pay your bill on computer at the table. And you have a server who brings your meal. If you don't know how to work it, they'll take your order, but they're moving more and more people away from the overhead of wait staff to the computer terminal. And they also put games on it where you can play while you're waiting for your food to come out. That's a new business model. I would assume the same concept to reduce the overhead of personnel. There's several examples in the convenience store, whether it's 7-Eleven or QuickCheck, where they have gone to computer terminals to order your sandwiches as opposed to having somebody taking an order. Some of the newer QuickChecks have a series of electronic cash registers where there's a person behind it if there's a problem. But by and large, you scan your stuff, pay it, and leave. One person responsible for 5 or 6 terminals. And now you're seeing 4 terminals at Lowe's where you can check out yourself. You don't need to go to a register. So I don't know whether that's robotics or not, or just improvements in technology, but it's happening in lots of different businesses.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. It's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Well, I don't know about how you feel, but eventually robotics are going to eventually clash with the $15 minimum wage. Many small businesses simply can't afford a $15 minimum wage. What do you think?
Well, you know, you and I talked about this last week when I said the Economist magazine did a story about productivity gains may be the downfall of the American economy in terms of jobs. Yet if you look at the productivity, it's been slowing over the last few years. I think the thing that's going to happen is the implementation of robots to take over specific jobs. Foxconn, who is the largest contract manufacturer for Apple, indicated that they were moving, going to build a big plant in the United States, but it's going to be primarily automated. So they had a facility in China a year ago, last month. They replaced 50,000 jobs in this plant with robots. And right now we have a tax structure that encourages us to put in robots because we get tax deductions for the capital of equipment. But somebody loses their job. And I mentioned to you, I thought it might be time to start thinking about some kind of a tax to a corporation who replaces a real person with automated technology or a robot, and use that money to somehow provide retraining for that employee or employees in general to find new jobs. Because I think as the robotic side of the economy takes greater and greater hold, there are going to be less and less opportunities unless we create a bunch of new businesses in the United States for those people who are going to get laid off because of technology. Okay. Well, we got about 2.5 minutes to go for our first show. Anything you want to say in closing?
Well, I wanted to I wanted to say it was going quite well until I got this echo that I can't seem to. I don't know if you're hearing an echo.
No, I don't hear an echo. So we got about 2 minutes. It's our first shot on this new show and working with the new network, and we've got some bugs to work out. We appreciate your patience and listening to us, and I thought our guest was terrific, and we hope to have more guests and talk about more things that can help you as a small business person grow and make your business productive. So we'll be on this is the live show. We have another new show that'll be on live show will be on
Tuesdays
at 11 a.m. Eastern, and another show will be pre-recorded, will be on Thursdays, I believe, at 9 p.m. on AMFM 24/7. So for now, this is Dan Perkins.
And Don Mazzella.
And remember, you can help us improve the show by giving us your feedback by going to recalculating.biz, leaving your questions, and if you have ideas for guests, please let us know. Thanks for listening and watching.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's show was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, for past shows and special offers. And until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success.